podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. We're here in Auckland returning on the 23rd of November to talk this week in cricket. We've got India New Zealand T20s, the Tim Payne Cricket Australia Sargo, WBBL semi-finals, Mushfiqur Rahim, the ICC event schedules announced, and the great AB de Villiers retires. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Well, Baldy, I let you open the show a couple of weeks ago with Australian glory. I'm going to have to come to you and let you have opening rights on what Richie Beno might describe as a bit of a schmozzle with Tim Payne and the Cricket Australia board. Baldy, over to you.
Three words, gentlemen. In poor taste. This whole incident has been in poor taste, in my view. Let's talk about Tim Payne first of all. The man has made a mistake. He has got himself involved in an incident that was reflected poorly on himself. It's unfortunately drawn another woman and his family into an incident that I'm sure they'd rather not be a part of, and has drawn that saga out thanks to some management by Cricket Australia, which we'll get to shortly, over a long period of time. Tim Payne has reflected on this issue and obviously has severe regret, both at the time, it should be said, and also now. If 2021 has taught me anything, it's that humans are capable of making mistakes, and it doesn't matter how senior you are or how big a role model you are. We are all humans and we all make mistakes. This is a pretty big one on Tim Payne's behalf in terms of an error in judgment. Let's just say at this point also that we don't know all the facts in this scenario. We don't know really whether or not those text messages were consensual. Cricket Australia's investigation has said that they were, but we don't know that for certain because we don't have all the facts to hand. So as at 23rd of November, we have been told that those exchanges were consensual, but we don't have both parties aligning or being able to provide evidence of that being the case. So we have to go with the facts that are on offer at the moment. What we do know is that Tim Payne has made a pretty severe error in judgment at that time, and that Cricket Australia found him to be not in breach of their code of conduct. Cricket Australia have, in my view, compounded the issue by electing him captain in an era and at a time where Australia needed to hold their cricketers to as high a standard as they possibly could. In my view, and this is just my view, Cricket Australia made an error in judgment also in electing to make Tim Payne the captain of the Australian team on the back of a cultural issue in South Africa, in Cape Town. Around about the same time, Cricket Australia would have known about this issue and continued to make him captain as a result. Regardless of whether or not the exchange was private between two consenting adults, it does raise the question of whether or not Tim Payne should have retained captaincy of the side in light of a cultural revolution or picking up the pieces, whatever you want to call it, that Australian cricket were trying to rebuild their test side, and you knew that this person had this issue that could have come out at any time over the last 3 years. It turns out that it's come out now in the lead up to a test series against England at the back end of Tim Payne's test career. But this issue could have come out any time in the last 3 years, you know. And the real disappointing thing for me is Cricket Australia has elected to continue to make him captain. They've not so much swept it under the rug, but they've assessed in their review that Tim Payne has not breached the code of conduct and was therefore perfectly within his rights to continue captaining the side. In my view, he may not have breached the code of conduct, but in light of the, let's just call it the cultural revolution that Australian cricket were trying to go through, the fact that Cricket Australia have seen it fit for him to maintain captaincy of that side under that guise of cultural revolution doesn't sit well with me at all. And I want to throw it over to you guys. I mean, outside of Australia, what do you guys think of this particular issue, Stu?
It's just weird. What a weird few months for Australian cricket. You've gone from before the T20 World Cup for this men's side, where they were completely written off. Justin Langer had lost the dressing room and all this kind of stuff was going on. Then they win the World Cup everyone's sort of a hero again. And then a week later, this stuff all comes out, and now you've got Tim Payne doing, you know, magazine stories saying Justin Langer wanted him to stay on as captain. It's all just really weird to me. And I mean, it's clearly Tim Payne has overstepped the mark with some of the things in those messages. But I tend to agree with you that Cricket Australia is the one that comes out looking the worst for me. When all that cultural shift and elite honesty, and you know, it just kind of undermines all that. So yeah, it's all just a bit strange, if you ask me.
Boys, I don't disagree with any of the sentiments around Cricket Australia probably needing to have taken a different view. I think I saw Mark Taylor, who was on the board of Cricket Australia at the time, in a pretty uncomfortable Channel 9 panel show where he was essentially interviewed about this. And one of the points he made was, you know, it's great with 4 years hindsight to say that they'd have made a different decision, but was it pains, no pun intended, to make the point that the Cricket Australia board that's currently in situ, whilst their recommendation said, you know, if we'd have known this information, we'd have made a very different decision. Tim Payne stood down. The Cricket Australia board didn't sack him from the captaincy at this point. So, you know, they kind of felt morally that strongly about it. If they were prepared to negotiate with Tim Payne and let him essentially write a press conference or a press statement that was his exit from the captaincy, and a strong position that he was going to be available for selection. It's really difficult to say what I'm about to say, given, you know, the scenario. But I think when we expect this of our sportsmen, we're always going to be disappointed. We look at some guys that are geniuses on football fields or cricket fields or rugby fields. They're just pretty average blokes. And I think when you expect higher moral standards from average blokes, you're going to essentially be in a position where you probably get this kind of situation. And I guess that, you know, the other element is, you know, he's got an extraordinary ability to catch a sphere travelling at 145 kph. That's his USP, right? He's a bloody good wicketkeeper. But ultimately, he's done something as a human being that he won't really be proud of. And I guess in the light of day, back in 2017-18, his career was over. This was a phoenix from the flames rising back into Test cricket, having, I think, Bordy made his debut in 2010. So I don't think we can put too much blame on Tim Payne as an individual, because he would have just said, well, the HR team and the code of conduct have done their investigation and said, I can carry on. Who's he to then say, oh, actually, no, I think I need to, you know, get a second opinion on this. So I just feel really sorry for him and probably his wife and probably the other woman as well, who now have got these wounds reopened rather publicly. But yeah, I guess where to from here is the question for Australian cricket.
Well, I guess, yeah, well, before we get to that, I guess I actually tend to agree with a lot of what all of you have said, actually, bits of it. But I can't get past how Cricket Australia got themselves into this situation, because in reality we've had Tim Payne stand down, but really there was no other option. Cricket Australia could not sack him because they instated him knowing what he had done, so they couldn't get rid of him once that became public, and then they didn't want that to be a part of the whole circus that was the Ashes that's about to start. So that they really got themselves into a situation where they couldn't get out of it without saving face. Apart from getting Tim Payne to stand down, what he does off the field is not a massive worry of mine. But when he has positioned himself, as there are numerous articles that if you look back, especially around the time that he was made captain, where they're talking about how they're now going to check themselves on and off the field, and there's a great quote here where I've got from him saying, "If you can ask yourself the question, am I making my fellow Australians proud? And that answer is a yes, then we're on the right track." So I don't know if they are on the right track, if that's the quote that we're going to go with. But look, I think let's move away from that. What he's done is poor. What Cricket Australia have done is even worse in terms of a governance and management perspective. What do we think about the next keeper? Does he hold his position for the Ashes now? I'll go to you, Baldy. Or is there someone else on the horizon?
Well, in my view, Tim Payne's, 36, 37? This was probably going to be his last test summer you would think, in charge of the Australian team. And if he's not the captain and he's 37 years of age, is he the future for Australian cricket? I say no. I say that Tim Payne, if he's not Test captain, I don't think is the right choice for Australia to move forward with their Test cricket. So let's have a look at some of the candidate players that could replace him. You've got Alex Carey, 30 years of age, has played one-day international cricket. I think he's actually captained Australia in one-day international cricket from memory. Has played one-day international cricket before, has performed pretty well in that format, even though he was left out of the T20 World Cup. You've got the guy that replaced him in the T20 World Cup in Josh Inglis, Western Australian player, 26 years of age, doesn't always keep for Western Australia, but when he does a really, really good job. And then you've got guys coming from the clouds. You've got someone like Jimmy Pearson from Queensland, who we'll get to, Binksy, who's performed very, very well in the last couple of Shield seasons and is a very good wicketkeeper. You've got Josh Philippe, who's played for the Sydney Thunder, again, very, very good wicketkeeper and also fellow Western Australian. He's right there in the mix as well. And we can't forget another couple of senior statesmen in Neville and also Matthew Wade. Now, Matthew Wade was the incumbent number five for Australia in the last Test match that we played. He played a really, really good role in the T20 World Cup, helped Australia win that and wore the gloves in that format. So he's a candidate. And of course, Neville is the New South Wales wicketkeeper, and by virtue of his sky blue cap, he'll be right up there at the pointy end of the conversation as well. So plenty of players for Australia to choose from. If you ask me, I would be going with either Carey or Inglis. Carey is 30. He has done the job. He will be a serviceable wicketkeeper for Australia at number seven, and when with the gloves moving forward. If you want to really look to the future, then someone like Josh Inglis at the age of 26 will give you at least 5, if not 10 years in the job, and could be a long, long-term wicketkeeper for Australia in that format if the selectors believe that looking to the future is the way to go. I think for this Ashes series, the fact that Alex Carey has done the job before, even if it's in ODI cricket, he will know what to expect at an international standard. He is in good enough form, despite a couple of blips here and there in the state stuff. But he will be able to withstand the pressure both on the field and from the Barmy Army, which I think is not to be understated for some of these guys who haven't played international cricket before, particularly against England. Binksy, you're the expert in wicketkeeping here. Do you want to run your eye over some of those candidates? Does anyone really stand out there from your point of view?
Mate, I don't know whether I'm the expert on wicketkeeping, but I own a couple of pairs of wicketkeeping gloves and a long sleeve shirt, which is more than I can say for Jimmy Pearson. So that will probably be, for me, look, jokes aside, the deciding factor. You can't have a guy who's kept wicket in short sleeves anywhere near that job as a custodian of Australian wicketkeeping history. On a serious note, though, and I've got to take, I guess, a slightly different point to your body, and it's not just because I always do. I don't think the future has anything to do with this. So looking at the ages of Jimmy Pearson, looking at the ages of Josh Inglis, if we're picking a keeper for the future, get him in the Australia A side. That's preparing for the future and giving you an opportunity. You've got Test matches at the Gabba, the MCG, the SCG, Adelaide, and hopefully Perth later in the summer. That's the present and the very, very immediate future. And I think you've got to pick your best person for that. It looks as if Australia have been relatively consistent with their selection. So I don't actually see a bolter of a Neville coming into the fray. Even though Pearson, I think, has had a really, really strong Shield season so far, I don't see him coming in. Inglis, I think, got 3 first-class hundreds last year for WA. And that's why he's in that in and around that A setup. If they do make a change, I think it comes from Inglis or Carey. But I would say that Tim Payne is still your best wicket keeper. And from a batting perspective, when you look at their respective first-class records, the only thing probably going against Tim Payne is his lack of first-class hundreds. Averages are all within 3 or 4 points, and he's played some Test cricket. So it's telling. I think they haven't changed that 15-man squad just yet, and I think they're trying to ride and see whether or not public opinion influences that. The bigger question for me is, from a captaincy perspective, who's going to take over? Hotly tipped that's going to be Pat Cummins, but is he going to be on the park for 5 very, very close together Test matches? And what's the contingency plan if he trips on a cricket ball, pulls aside, or needs a rest? What's the backup plan for Australia from that perspective?
Yeah, I think the load management perspective there is always going to hurt Pat Cummins's his claim to that position. I actually think it might actually revert back to a batsman. If it's not Pat Cummins, I think he's probably the leading the front runner there. But I think it could actually be Steve Smith. I just heard a bombshell go off there. But I'll leave you with that, Stu. What do you think, Steve Smith?
I think it's the natural thing. I think we actually kind of have to. I mean, I guess we've just spent 10 minutes talking about culture, but I actually think we just have to move on from Sandpaper Gate. And Steve Smith is, if he's welcomed back into the side and he's welcomed to stand at slip and tell Tim Payne what to do anyway, then he should just be the captain, because, like, that's, you know, he is the natural person, if you ask me, to lead that side if he's done it before. But, I mean, I'm not the one in the dressing room. I'm not the one hearing the people talk, you know, before a game and inspire the other people in that dressing room. But yeah, Steve Smith's the one that looks like the natural leader if I was choosing the side.
Australia don't have a history of electing fast bowlers as captain. Ray Limble was the last one to do it in 1956. Richie Benno, I think, was the last bowler to captain Australia, and that was back in the 60s. So Australia have a long, 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 long history of having batsmen captain the side. I don't have a problem with Pat Cummins captaining the side if Steve Smith is his vice captain and he continues to do what he was doing for Tim Payne, which was pretty much steer the ship around and give lots of advice from first slip. I think Cummins would benefit definitely from having a guy like Steve Smith as his vice captain who can give him tactical advice. And when Pat's thinking about bowling and doing all the things that he's got to do as a fast bowler, Steve Smith can kind of run the show there. And then Pat Cummins can do all of the kind of leadership stuff and all the media and all the rest of it. It all very much depends on whether or not Pat Cummins is willing and able to deal with all of the extra stress and attention that's going to come with taking over from another difficult captaincy transition. It's not like the Border, Taylor, Waugh, Ponting, Clark transitions that have all been relatively smooth for Australia on and off the field. This is going to be a very difficult time for Pat Cummins to pick up those reins. And is he comfortable doing that, I think, will be the question that only he can answer.
And look, we've probably talked about Australia enough for my liking on this podcast, but there is the WBBL final going on this weekend, and that gives me a chance to just say that Sophie Devine's Perth Scorchers are already qualified for that on Saturday. But Bully, you just want to touch a little bit on that and what we can expect from that game?
Yeah, so the final four has been decided. The Perth Scorchers finished 9-3. Excellent performance by them. And they look really the favourites to win. They'll get the home final in Perth. Brisbane will play Adelaide in Adelaide. And then the winner of that game will play Melbourne in Adelaide the following day on the 25th. And then the final will be in Perth against Perth on the, I think that's the 27th. So that would make it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I think. Something like that. My explainer is a little bit lacking today. But yeah, congratulations to those teams that have made it through. The Brisbane Heat have come through at the right part of the season on the back of Jess Jonathan's 21 wickets and some excellent batting performances as well. But Perth Scorchers look like they're the favourites to take home that title, and Sophie Devine has just been outstanding.
Lippy, we'll move closer to home. For those of you who probably are still either drowning your sorrows in the Black Caps heartache at the World Cup or Australian celebrations, may not have noticed that there's been a T20 bilateral series going on in India with the Black Caps in India. Lippy, you want to give us a little bit of a rundown of what's gone on there?
Yeah, well, I think you've kind of summed up the mood of that bilateral series. And I mean, you know, I guess we stick the boot in about that, but it's, I think we have to remember that nobody wanted it this way. It was, you know, COVID that intervened in terms of the scheduling, and yeah, there's not a lot that those sides could have done about it. And I think those games have been treated in that way, really. And you know, New Zealand's lost all three games, and really in games that just kind of got progressively more comfortable for India. We first game went down to the final over, but yeah, I don't think anyone in New Zealand, I don't think the New Zealand team would be too worried about that, to be honest. I'm certainly not as a fan. You know, we won the most important T20 game against them, and that was during the World Cup. And yeah, I just think all this scheduling stuff, it's just made for three games that no one really cares about. But I think there are a few things that are worth talking about from that. And probably the first one that I want to do is that there has been a relatively strong performer in that series for us, and that's been Martin Guptill. and he's probably been our most impressive performer, you know, arguably with the bat for the past 6 or 12 months in that format. And I'm wondering, you know, Baldy, do you reckon he's done enough to earn himself another IPL gig? Because I think the knock on him's always been spin. But if we think about what he did to Zampa over here in New Zealand, I really think you could do a lot worse than with two new teams than getting Martin Guptill in the mix.
Yeah, expansion's the key, isn't it? Two new franchises moving the IPL out to 10 from the 2022 edition onwards. And I think Martin Guptill should be right in the mix, absolutely. He doesn't have a contract at the moment. But you just have a look at his last five T20 scores, 51, 31, 70, 28 and 4. So he's still got it. He's still got it. And he's doing that against India in India. So any kind of Martin Guptill can't play spin or won't be successful in India, he's proven that he can be. Three big scores in those three matches in losing causes. He's absolutely got the credentials for mine to be able to play in those conditions. And I think IPL franchises, particularly the two expansion franchises, should be considering him at the top of the order.
Brilliant. That's the answer I wanted. Yeah, let's hope he does get that gig. I thought it was really interesting that Kyle Jameson didn't play any of the games. They obviously picked him in that T20 World Cup squad, and he didn't play a game in that squad, in that tournament at all. And then they've chose to keep his focus on the tests. Personally, I absolutely love this. I just hope that he doesn't play any T20s in the future. You know, he's got this massive IPL contract now, so he doesn't have to worry about trying to put his best foot forward for that. He can just go over to the IPL, work on his skills over there. But for New Zealand, he can just focus on like being the leader of the next attack, I guess, because Trent Bolt, Tim Southee, eventually are going to have to move on. And sadly for you, Raj, Neil Wagner will eventually retire, as much as none of us want that to happen. But what do you reckon, Raj? Because, I mean, would you like to see him essentially become a test specialist at international level?
I think so. I like the fact that he's come storming onto the Red Bull stage, and he's actually prolonged it for a little bit. It wasn't really a flash in the pan, and it comes down to the lengths that he's been bowling, and those are test match lengths. If you have a look back through the greats, you've got McGrath. We're going to talk about a man, Vernon Philander, shortly. He'll come up in your feed. Bowling those test match lines are incredibly important, and he fits into our lineup really well with the little bit extra he has in terms of height, bounce, and a little bit of pace. So 100% I want to see him continue to do that red ball stuff, and if he's required with the white ball, sure, then let's use him. But I think we have other options at the moment who are better suited to the white ball cricket than he is. So red ball, Kyle Jameson for me.
Love it. Everyone's agreeing with me. This is fantastic. I've got one question for Binksy, and maybe that's where the agreement will end. It always seems to be that way. But when I was watching those games, I was just thinking, like, Rohit, Rishabh Pant, all these guys, they're resting for the test series, but they're playing in these silly T20 games. And I started to feel quite insulted. Like, do they not rate us as a test side? We just won the World Test Championship. We've beaten them in a final. Am I nuts to feel insulted about this, Binksy, or am I, you know, do I just need to calm down here?
Yeah, so the fact that you throw to me as the last person in the segment probably leads to the fact that I'm going to have the last word on it. So I think that's more about our production meetings need a little bit of a revamp rather than anything else. But Lippy, to be honest, look, I don't. I think that we're in a situation now. Raj made the point when we were talking about the evolution of T20 cricket that the IPL was, you know, absolutely a better product than international T20 cricket because there'd be several Indian sides that they could have sent to that World Cup of a similar standard. And I think, you know, just maybe India have actually got things right in terms of their rest and rotation and having, look, an embarrassment of riches to pick from. So I just actually think that they've got so many options that it's really difficult to probably satisfy a lot of these players' international aspirations without having that kind of ability to manipulate and roll, you know, roll squads. You only need to look at what they did to England with, you know, the likes of Akshar Patel, who's not going to, you know, can barely get a game outside of that. And he burst onto the scene in that series. So, yeah, I don't feel essentially affronted by it if I were you. I think all of us are going to feel the wrath of the fact that India have just got such strength across all disciplines at the moment. Raj, just so that I don't have the last word in this segment, so please no one throw back to me at the end until we flip to the next bit. I know you do want to talk a little bit about that Indian batting lineup and what it might look like in that test series.
Yeah, again, we've come back to the Christmas analogy with too many toys to choose from here. And there's a lot of confusion around what that Indian batting lineup is going to look like. And it's that number five spot that everyone is talking about. So the premise is this. They've got KL Rahul and Rohit Sharma who they want to open the batting. So Rohit Sharma has been rested for this series. So there is a spot open. Who gets that spot? The question is it Gill? Is it Agrawal who gets that spot? What's causing confusion here is that they want Shubman Gill in the side, but where does he fit in that side when they go to South Africa next, when Rohit Sharma comes back? And that's where everyone's starting to talk about him batting at number five. So it'll be interesting to see what they do here and where Shubman... The thinking is, where does Shubman Gill fit into this Indian side with a full-strength lineup with Virat Kohli back? So that's where a lot of confusion is coming from. So stay tuned. I know you guys, just like me, will be eagerly looking at their phone once they announce that Indian lineup and the New Zealand lineup as well. But I think we might actually see Gill batting in the middle order and Agarwal opening the batting, which is opposite to what I thought would happen in the test preview. So stay tuned to that.
Yeah, look, and I think for any listeners not or kind of wondering why we haven't really talked about that test series, because we've done a preview on the series, just scroll back in your feed and you should find that. And yeah, super, super excited about that series. And I think New Zealand cricket fans, we're about to start getting spoiled with the amount of cricket that's on. We've got the Super Smash starting this Friday as well and kicking off at Hagley Oval. So yeah, it's going to be... a lot of cricket for New Zealand followers to watch and sort of across all the different channels, unfortunately, I guess, for those with that don't want to subscribe to a bunch of different things. But luckily for everyone, a lot of the Super Smash is free to air on TVNZ. So, yeah, a lot of New Zealand stuff to look out for.
Raj, going to come to you next for your take on this week in cricket. Mushfika Rahim, known to be relatively outspoken, and some comments this week that have piqued your interest?
Yes, interesting week in the Bangladeshi dressing room and boardroom, it seems. So Pakistan 2020s, which are about to start, don't feature Mushfika Rahim in the side, and he's been rested, which is the official party line. But he's come out this week and said that he's available. He is not being rested. He has, in fact, been dropped. So that's causing a bit of confusion around the world. When Captain Mamadullah was asked about it, he said, best to ask team management, which I don't know if that's the best thing to do. That's more like pouring fire there pouring a bit of petrol onto that fire, I think. But look, Mushfika Rahim's going to have to go and talk to the board. They've summoned him to come in and talk about this. But look, there is a history of unrest at the board level with Bangladesh a couple of years ago. The players went on strike, not getting their pay. And guys like Mushfika Rahim, who are great batsmen in their own right, really good at that short 2020 game, this is where, as we spoke about in the evolution of 20 cricket, we start to see the erosion of some really great players from their national setups and going to just be mercenaries around the world playing 2020 cricket. It would be very sad for Bangladesh for them to lose Mushfika Rahim. Hopefully we won't see that. Back to you in the studio, Bingsy.
Well, we are a New Zealand cricketing podcast. We don't often talk about the ABs, but we are going to talk about an AB, and that's AB de Villiers, who's announced his retirement from all forms of cricket. Border, you've got a little bit of a tribute and a teaser all in one.
Yeah, sad to see AB de Villiers retire this week. An RCB challenger for life. A veteran of 114 tests, of course, for South Africa, 8,700 runs, averaged 50 in test cricket, averaged 53.5 in 228 one-day internationals for his country, 9,500 runs, 25 ODI hundreds, can you believe? An incredible career for AB de Villiers. Of course, 340 domestic T20s, averaged 37 and struck at 150. This guy is a legend of South African cricket, a legend of domestic T20 cricket. His record is unbelievable. 9,400 domestic T20 runs in those 340 games. Unbelievable record. He, of course, goes out a winner with RCB. Just an absolute winner on every level. Might not have got the trophy and the silverware to go with it, but he's an absolute winner in my book. And he'll come up very soon in the Top Order Podcast Hall of Fame. Stay tuned.
Well, that's a nice place to wrap up the podcast. A shame a legend of New Zealand cricket, Martin Crowe, couldn't get onto that list, but we can tease to you, of course, that AB comes up in a couple of weeks' time. Do stay tuned in the feed for our next episode of the Cricketing Hall of Fame. We hope you enjoyed our evolution of T20 cricket musings as well. We certainly enjoyed recording those over two parts or so. But for now, it's good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in.
Sports Social Podcast Network.